Hello, welcome to this week's Open and Bell podcast. I'm boxing news editor Tris Dixon, joined, I think, for the third, maybe fourth consecutive week by Matt Christie.
Sounds surprised.
There was almost a bit of a drum roll going on there. How's it going, Matt?
Yeah, going really well, going really well.
You're swamped with Ronnie Davis memories now, aren't you?
Yeah, there's a lot more there. I think, as often can be the case when, as you all know, better than most is when you can conduct an interview, you kind of get into a conversation and you get so much back, you could come away with it, you could almost write their biography. And then it's kind of picking out what bits you put in and what bits you don't in a four-page feature, which isn't enough space for this, but, you know.
Deserves more.
It does deserve more because, you know, Ronnie's an interesting character in his own right, but some of the stories he's got from Chris Eubanks' career in the 90s when he was WBO middleweight and super middleweight champion are fascinating to me as a boxing fan.
Give me one.
Well, I'm not sure what's going to make it in yet. But there's some interesting things about what went on in Dubai on diving boards and things like that. It's almost reminded me a little bit. Okay, I may not put this one in now, and I probably won't. Is that reading it back? It almost reminded me of something from the Fast Show. Was it the Fast Show? No, it wasn't. It was what was it called with David Walliams and
Little Britain.
I want that one.
Little Britain. Yeah.
He said that they were walking out onto their resort somewhere in Dubai. It was during Chris Eubanks, kind of between the Steve Collins, you might have been just after the Steve Collins first fight or just after the Steve Collins rematch. and they walked out to a, it was about 3 days before he was due to fight, it might even have been the day before he was due to fight, and they walked out to a swimming pool, an Olympic-sized swimming pool. Ronnie Davis is chatting away to someone, turns around and Chris Eubank has disappeared. Next thing you know, he looks up and he's at the very, very top of the very, very top of the diving board, and he just does a swan dive straight off the top and down into the pool, obviously risking all sorts of injury just before a fight. But you do really get a sense of how much Ronnie Davis thinks and feels for Chris Eubank, but at the same time you get that element of infuriation that he must have been feeling both inside the ring and out.
Okay, interesting. Can he make the difference on a week Saturday night, Ronnie Davis? Will he make a big difference in the corner? Will he be allowed to say anything?
I do talk about that a little bit in the feature, but I don't. I think what, you know, again, not wanting to say too much, but I think what the reason they get on so well, Ronnie Davis and the Eubanks, is that Eubank Senior was most certainly a one-off. And what Ronnie Davis didn't do, in that maybe some other trainers might have done, is that he didn't try to harness that individuality. He didn't attempt to teach him maybe some rights and wrongs in his boxing style. He realised that if he was going to do that, if he was going to start to lecture him on some of the fundamentals, he would be taking away some of the brilliance at the same time. And he's also taken that attitude very much with Eubank Jr. And it reminded me a little bit, and please don't think for one second I'm putting either of the Eubanks in the same category as Muhammad Ali, but it did remind me a little bit of when I used to speak to Angelo Dundee, and Angelo Dundee used to say with Muhammad Ali, you just pretty much used to have to let him get on with it, you know, and there was no point in trying to change someone as brilliant as that. And I suppose on a smaller scale, you can relate that to Ronnie Davis and Chris Eubank.
Yeah, fair enough. I had an interesting chat with Amir Khan on Monday night.
How did that go?
We chatted for probably 15, 20 minutes, something like that. It was interesting. I mean, it seems like it's almost a given that he's going to get by Devin Alexander, and I'd probably tip him in that fight, but he seems certain that he's going to get fights with Mayweather and Pacquiao, maybe even both next year. and then maybe even round off 2015 by beating Kell Brook. It just seems to be a bit of a bridge too far. I wonder where he's getting this from, if he's got it from a reliable source. Obviously, he was hung out to dry by Mayweather before when he won the poll to be his next opponent. And then since then, Marcus Maidana, who Khan's beaten twice, fought Floyd. Khan, interesting, I spoke to him about the Richard Schaefer Golden Boy situation. Interesting, he basically said, still in touch with Richard, really like Oscar. He played quite a straight bat, but basically said, Al Heyman does everything for him now anyway as a manager and advisor, so he just leaves it up to Al. And obviously we know that Al Heyman's got considerable influence in boxing, so wherever, I'm sure Khan will end up with some lucrative purses next year regardless, but whether he will fight Mayweather or Pacquiao, let alone both, remains to be seen. But I mean, the thing is, what you can't, people do knock Amir, obviously, for several reasons, not least being overconfident, but you can't exactly say he's ducking the best, can you?
No, and that's something that you really, well, that I've always admired about him. And I think he's done well to kind of be back at a level where he can mention those names, even if he doesn't fight them, because not so long ago it looked like his career was over.
Well, it was interesting. I mean, I still think I would have liked to have seen a Bradis-Prescott rematch at some point.
Yeah.
If he was that certain it was a fluke, why not do it again? You know, perfectly sellable fight, you know, with their history. And, you know, going back further still, when he was at lightweight, I would have liked to have seen him in with John Murray or John Thaxton.
Mm.
They were sort of, you know, because he hasn't really had, and he's still now without fighting Kell Brook, he hasn't had a big domestic fight. And, you know, we've seen what they can do in this country. And in fact, that brings me on to this weekend quite smoothly, actually. We've seen what interest a big domestic fight can...
smooth.
Yeah, I surprised myself with that. I thought that's the perfect opportunity. We've seen what a grudge can do. And this weekend, Nathan Cleverley and Tony Bellew, as if you guys didn't know where I was heading with that, meet in a rematch in Liverpool. Just finished watching their final press conference online ahead of the weigh-in tomorrow. Interesting it was, to say the least. Basically, there was a bit of muttering while Eddie Hearn was talking. Bellew had his headphones on but took them off, put them on his head, and you could hear them sort of muttering away at one another. Then when they went head to head, they eventually had to be pulled apart without it getting too fractious. Then Cleverley put his first two fingers up at Bellew as if to say it's going to be 2-0. Bellew slapped his hand away, and then they were sort of led apart. So it wasn't fireworks that people might have wanted or feared, but it was interesting, spicy, and it was probably just on the right side of decent taste to make a lot of highlight reels and therefore drum up a lot more pay-per-view business. I mean, you know what, I'm still weighing up whether I will get the pay-per-view or whether I'll watch a later version. I haven't decided, but just because I've got other things going on this weekend. But the more it comes to it, the more I want to see the fight. And that's probably just the boxing fan in me. You know, I've got no idea who's going to win.
Yeah, it certainly has, as fights like this do, it's got more and more interesting as, yeah, it's got closer. Tired of talking about the whole pay-per-view thing a little bit, but it's definitely, as you say, as you said there, for the boxing fan, it's a really, really, particularly the British boxing fan, it's an enticing, interesting matchup. And the first fight was a cracker. Not a classic, but a cracker, and I believe that the rematch will be similar.
Cleverley saying he doesn't think it will go the distance. He said that in this week's issue, and he said it at the press conference. Bellew's confident of a knockout, obviously, because he's got a reputation as being a bigger puncher. Do you see it going the distance at all?
I've got a feeling it won't. I've got a feeling it won't go the distance. I think for me that we know what Bellew's all about. Cleverley, I'm not sure, and I think we've spoke about it before on this platform, I'm not sure how mentally strong he is after that Kovalev fight. He may be absolutely fine, you know, and for the sake of the fight, I hope he is. But you just don't know how a fighter, particularly one who was unbeaten, one who loses unbeaten record in such a brutal fashion, will cope when he's put under some serious pressure again, if doubts will start to dictate what he's doing. Yeah, and it's an interesting, to me, it's another element that makes this one worth watching. If Cleverley comes out and he looks fantastic and everything else, then Cleverley has got quite a career ahead of him at cruiserweight.
It's interesting, isn't it? I think, you know, to look at the fight almost section by section, a lot could be dictated by who wins the first three or four rounds. Yeah. I think if Cleverley comes out and looks sensational, I think that will give him massive confidence. And I also think it could mean that Bellew might get a little bit wild, start swinging, maybe looking for one shot to try and turn it round, and perhaps become a little bit more clumsy and cumbersome. If Bellew comes out and makes an early statement, will Cleverley get desperate, or will, as Bellew seems to think, he'll not fancy it and either be pulled out, saved, or just withdraw?
Mm.
Or maybe go into safety mode. Price it up for me, Matt. Obviously, Paul Wheeler's done the preview for us. How would you price it?
I don't even know actually who would be the. I would say just on past form that. Cleverley would be a very, very narrow favourite.
It's evens.
Right.
So they're both evens.
Okay,
with the draw at 25-1. So the bookies cannot separate them. They're clearly favouring Cleverley's class and championship experience. They're giving him credit for that, and they're giving Bellew perhaps credit for looking better at cruiserweight than he has, than Cleverley has. And for having less scars from losing to Stevenson than perhaps Cleverley does from losing to Kovalev.
Yeah.
Although I've got to say, having spoken to Nathan last week for a while, for the Q&A that's in this week's issue, I spoke to him and Tony on the same day. Nathan did just about convince me that he's back in the game, so to speak.
Yeah.
That he is ready and keyed up and switched on for it. And you know, you can tell sometimes, can't you, this close to a fight, who says what they mean and what a fighter's trying to project.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like he was trying to project anything. It sounded quite natural and quite real. So some good stuff from both of those guys that are in the magazine this week. I don't know. I was leaning towards Bellew a lot at the start, and this week I've been swinging back towards Cleverley and I'm not quite sure I'll make a decision until maybe the time of the fight.
Mm.
I mean, you know, this is a fight where people are talking about how mind games can be important. It's feasible, not likely, but it's feasible. The fight could even be won and lost tomorrow, either on the scales with weight or at the weigh-in through a psychological edge, one way or the other. Is that, you know, it seems like there's so little to choose between them that a very slight, slender margin of difference tomorrow, so who comes out feeling better, could make all the difference.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Well, glad you agree.
Absolutely.
What's the pick of the undercard for you, Matt? Obviously, we've been told it's sort of a bumper undercard to make it pay-per-view. We're not going to go back down that pay-per-view debate route because we've been there the last couple of weeks. I've got to say, there's one fight that stands out to me, but what do you think's looking attractive?
I'd like to see how De Gale gets on with Peraban, Callum Smith as well.
The stage locker.
Yeah, so I think those two for me.
Yeah, I was going to. The De Gale Peraban fight is a better fight than people are giving him credit for. It's just a tough one for De Gale because, I mean, who would you have him fight if you were his promoter or even if you were De Gale himself when he seems to be, you know, on the cusp of a world title fight? Who would you put him in with? I mean,
probably not Peraban, to be honest.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But you know, if De Gale's as good as he says he is, then, you know, Peraban won't have a chance.
No. And I do think that Peraban's style, if De Gale is on his game and he looks as good as he has done at times, then I think he will. There's a chance he could dominate Peraban. But if he's not, Peraban is a tough, tough customer.
So I fancy doing some round-by-round betting on the Joshua Sprott fight. And what I wanted to do was to see how much money I could make on a quick Anthony Joshua knockout. I don't bet on fights, I just made that clear. Not even a cheeky fiver here or there. I'm just going to try and pull up the prices just quickly, but do you think there's much money to be made from an early knockout?
No. I think you'd have to do it by the second, wouldn't you, to get long odds? No, maybe if you said 68 seconds.
Do you think it would be that once? Do you think?
I don't know. I feel like I'm being really, really rude to Michael Sprott with because I have. I've said it with things that I've put up on the website and I think in the magazine as well, that I don't think Michael Sprott is a good opponent at this stage for Anthony Joshua, and I've got the utmost admiration for Michael Sprott. But I just fear, I mean, I think in his last fight he was knocked out by Carly Meehan, a 45-year-old Carly Meehan, and he's been knocked out a few times recently. I just fear that this has got one-sided knockout all over it, written all over it.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid to say I can't find the round-by-round odds at the moment, but I know that they were incredibly slender. In fact, maybe even odds-on for the first couple of rounds. And so, therefore, I won't be betting because, you know, that's what I would have thought. I can see it being two rounds max.
Yeah, no, I can. It would be a shock if Michael Sprott was still going, say, rounds four or five.
Joshua starts like a steam train, doesn't he? He comes out, he's physically imposing. I can see him almost jumping on Sprott, and Sprott just crumbling early.
No, I mean, even when Sprott was a young man, even when Sprott, you know, could perhaps proclaim to be at his peak, he was never, his chin was never up there in his strong points.
You know, I'm not sure if I said this though last week. Perhaps I did. Maybe I'm just going crazy. I'm not sure, but with Sprott, what's interesting about Sprott is obviously he has had a good, very solid career as a sparring partner to some of the top heavyweights in the world, including the Klitschkos. But he doesn't take those survival instincts into the ring with him.
He still has
that sort of, he fights with a winner's mentality, which is dangerous because obviously you leave yourself open and you get caught in boxing when you don't have a sparring partner's mentality. He's one of the few guys who's arguably a career sparring partner who's been able to make the jump up in levels in the ring at times in his career.
Yeah, I know, and I don't know. I mean, he's looked okay. I mean, the last time I saw him at ringside was, I think it was the infamous prize fighter where James Toney was also waddling around, and Sprott, you know, he's technically sound, he's very good, but even in that, you almost sense that he was quite a bit obviously slower than he used to be, and he was taking some shots and starting to look quite desperate against some of his opponents there who were on a much lower level than he was. Even though I think he may have won that, but he had some trouble in actually getting that far. And against someone like Anthony Joshua, I don't know. So let's move on.
Also on the bill, George Groves is fighting American Dennis Duglin. There's fights for Scott Quigg and Jamin McDonnell. Interesting thing about George Groves earlier was saying that if he fights James DeGale again, it will be the biggest fight in British boxing history.
Who said that, sorry? George Groves,
yeah.
The biggest fight in British boxing history. If he was to fight, what, who
James
again?
James DeGale.
James DeGale again. Right, okay.
True or false? I mean, it's true he said it.
Well, it's false, isn't it? Nonsense.
Okay, glad we cleared that up. Just back to those Joshua prices, I've got them. He's evens to win in the first round, 2-1 to win in the second round. 6-1 in the third round, you get the pattern. By the time you pick round 10, he's 66-1. Michael Sprott, priced 200-1, basically for any round from 200 to, from round 200, from round 4 through to 10, and 100-1 to win in the first, and then 150-1 to win in the second or third. So Anthony Joshua evens to go in and wipe out Sprott in a round. So put on a pound, get a pound back.
Yeah, you've got to be putting some serious money on there to So we're laughing all the way to the bank in years.
Yeah. So I think that speaks volumes out of that fight. I mean, it'd be interesting to see where he goes next. Talking about a Kevin Johnson fight for him in January, I think that's a suitable fight.
Yeah, definitely.
Get some rounds in.
Yeah, and then, definitely.
And then take it from there. However, all this Liverpool talk, you wouldn't know that meanwhile in Macau, some guy called Manny Pacquiao's back in action. And he's got New Yorker Chris Algieri. Looking forward to the fight, Matt?
Yeah, I am. I am looking forward to the fight. But yeah, I always tend to with Manny Pacquiao. And he is at that stage of his career now where you can almost say, right, might not have long left, so let's appreciate him while he's still around, that kind of thing. Algieri wasn't the most inspiring of choices. But from, and as John Denham, by the way, who is out there, he's doing some brilliant work for the website, and you know everything you need to know about that fight is on the website. But he has said that Algieri's confidence is striking. It's kind of a bit unnerving almost, because I think John went out there of the belief that Pacquiao might walk through him. And as can happen when you spend a bit of time in the build-up, your initial instincts can be challenged somewhat by what you're hearing in front of you. To me, interesting fight. It's as every Pacquiao fight and as every Mayweather fight recently, it's kind of set against this Mayweather versus Pacquiao backdrop, and if the favourite doesn't win, then it could potentially ruin that fight. Well, maybe that's not the case, as history has shown us. But good fight, in answer to your question, or rather, yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Pacquiao by knockout. Can you see a knockout? He hasn't scored one for 5 years, nearly 5 years and a week or two since he knocked out Miguel Cotto in Las Vegas.
Yeah, you kind of think yes, you think he can, but then you look back the fact that I think people are saying, well, yeah, he's going to walk through him, in that Provodnikov very, very nearly did walk through him. But Algieri got up and he took some serious licks for the rest of that fight. But I think Algieri's tough, but I do fancy that Pacquiao can finish him.
Is anything you like the look of on the undercard? It's a divisive undercard. Some people saying it's terrible. Some people saying it's not too bad. I reasonably like it. I mean, it's short and I was going to say relatively painless. It might not be for a couple of the fighters on there. I think Jesse Vargas, Antonio DeMarco, has the hallmarks of being a little belter, providing DeMarco is not too far on the downside of his career.
Yeah, it depends. Vargas as well. I mean, he's not. Don't know. He hasn't overly impressed me.
But that's the whole thing.
Since he stepped up, but he's not like thriller minute though, is he, Jesse Vargas?
He's steady though, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
I think their styles could mesh for a good fight.
Yeah, yeah.
Lomachenko's fighting a Thai who's got a 52-1 record.
It's interesting.
But then the Thai, if you look at his record, he's fought a lot of debutants, a lot of people who've never been near a boxing ring, you'd imagine. And then there's Zhu Shiming, who's in action, who, like Pacquiao, trained by Freddie Roach, could be on the verge of a world title fight next year. We're seeing more and more of these amateur stars, including Lomachenko, ready for a world title in 5 to 10 fights, aren't we? Do you think any of the Brits will be along those lines, or do you think it's just these exceptionally seasoned fighters from the Far East?
I can't imagine in the next 12 months, maybe this time next year we'll be thinking that some of the Brits will be getting world title shots in 2016.
Chris Algieri, by the way, priced with William Hill, for instance, 7-1 underdog, Pacquiao 1-14 on.
I don't know, I think it's going to be difficult. I think Algieri could make it difficult for Pacquiao. Difficult, but not impossible.
Chris Algieri, I think there's an article on the website, is there not, saying that Mayweather-Pacquiao isn't the best fight for boxing?
Yeah, that came from Algieri's mouth.
So what's the best result for boxing in Macau on Saturday night?
What, from my point of view?
Well, not mine.
No, I didn't know if you were referring to Algieri. Best result for boxing would be for Pacquiao to look absolutely fantastic and Mayweather to emerge from the woodwork and say, okay, let's do it.
Can you imagine that happening?
I can imagine it, but I don't think it will.
How much, you know, given that that is still clearly the biggest fight that could be made in boxing, how much of its appeal has it lost in the last 4 or 5 years?
It has lost a lot of its appeal, I think, but the crucial thing is, and if we're talking about for the good of boxing, for boxing to flourish, you obviously need as many, many fans involved as possible, putting money into the sport, etc., etc. And to the majority of kind of floating fans or the general sports fan, they won't be quite as hurt by the fact that this fight didn't happen 4 years ago as, say, us hardcore are. They won't be aware that both Pacquiao and Mayweather have probably slipped a little bit from their peaks. They won't be overly aware that Pacquiao has suffered two losses since then. So some of the luster has gone. They will be aware of the fact that Pacquiao and Mayweather are the two greatest fighters, or perceived to be the two greatest fighters fighting today, and they will lap it up. It'll be a massive, massive occasion in the sporting world.
Financially, has the fight lost any more than it would have made 4 years ago, or do you think it's arguably going to make more if it happens now?
I would say on a level, comparatively to how times have changed. I still think it would be huge. And even, you know, you people who say, I don't care whether, you know, and it's very often staunch, slightly bitter boxing fans, I don't care whether it happens, you can guarantee they'll watch it, and you can guarantee they'll pay money to watch it. But I understand that point of view as well, because there are so many fights in boxing, there's so many other characters we could be focusing on than these two. But ultimately, there's also a feeling that the era that we're a part of will have missed a trick, a massive trick, if this fight doesn't happen.
Say it happens, and it's promoted by, well, I don't know even who would promote it. Obviously, Top Rank would be involved. But name one fight you would want on the undercard that's realistic.
That's realistic?
Yeah.
I don't know. For these two to fight, Muhammad Ali versus Vladimir Klitschko is realistic. But you could
have Vladimir Klitschko, Deontay Wilder.
I'll have that then, please.
If Wilder comes through Stiverne.
I'll have that, please. Yeah. Yeah, why not? What an occasion that would be. Yes, please. I'll have that for Christmas, please.
And nothing else. Nothing else on that bill, just the two fights.
I'll absolutely do it. Yeah, why not? And why not just have those two fights on as well? Why not just do that?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Simple. That's it. You better get out of there and get on the phone.
Yeah. Before anybody else thinks of it.
Exactly. Can we copyright that idea, please? Oh, dear. Yeah, so I don't know. Obviously, it's been a sort of tantalising carrot that's been dangled, isn't it, relentlessly, and it's one of those things, almost like a cartoon. You sort of creep up to this carrot that's been dangled in front of you, and you just got to jump it, and someone pulls it away at the last minute, again and again and again.
Yeah.
And you know, after doing a couple of miles of chasing that carrot, it's just obviously the luster's worn off. But it's interesting, to say the least, that it's coming to the forefront of discussions again. I mean, I've put in the editorial this week that, quite simply, if it's not Pacquiao, who the heck is Mayweather going to fight, and how can he justify it? I mean, that's what I don't know, is if there's anyone else but Pacquiao in that opposite corner, how's he going to justify fighting them? Because you can't say, oh, he's the best in his weight class, he's this, he's that. Because if it's not Manny Pacquiao, it just really, for me, is not going to count. And the same thing for Manny Pacquiao. This Chris Algieri fight is another fight similar to the Brandon Rios one last year. It's a glorified exhibition because it's not Floyd Mayweather. So the only business they have fighting really is against each other.
I 100% agree. 100% agree. I mean, my instinct through years of kind of living in this will they won't they hell is telling me that ultimately they won't. But I mean, say they don't fight in May, who is Mayweather going to fight? An Amir Khan fight would be interesting to me. And perhaps you could, if he was to pursue a rematch with Miguel Cotto.
The problem is, if Cotto fights Canelo early in May,
exactly,
any fight that Mayweather has with anyone except for Pacquiao, I think will be overshadowed by Canelo Cotto.
Unless he fights Golovkin. But again, we're going down streets.
Fantasy streets. Okay, so back to the real world, with a bang, a left hook to be abundantly blatant. Vladimir Klitschko took out Kubrat Pulev in Hamburg last week in an impressive style. Pulev was said to be arguably the best challenger out there for Vladimir, and you know what, I thought Vladimir looked a bit uncomfortable under pressure a couple of times, but ultimately he was wiped out with a left hook. Vladimir, another sort of, he's, you know, the guys he's beaten now, the likes of Povetkin and Pulev, it sort of reminds me a little bit of when Lennox was beating the likes of David Tour and Michael Grant.
Yeah, I'll go with that. Yeah, I'll go with that. It's just that kind of to our eyes and ears, the names like Pulev and Povetkin kind of don't roll off the tongue quite as easily. Their language isn't so discernible. And these are not household names that he's in with. I'm not saying Michael Grant was, but there was a bit of a buzz about him, but probably because he was from America. David Tour, of course, a New Zealander, he had all sorts of buzz about him because of the way he'd walked through some of the contenders in the heavyweight division. But again, over and over and over again, Vladimir Klitschko is proving himself against the best fighters he can do. You know, we've just spoke about Mayweather, we've just spoke about Pacquiao. If Klitschko was to retire tomorrow, there isn't anyone we could look back and say, oh, we should have fought him. He's fought the best available fighter pretty much at every opportunity.
The only thing you could say is obviously he hasn't cleaned out the next generation, so to speak, which I think arguably Lennox did with the guys that we mentioned. And the next generation really would be to scalp at least a couple of Fury, Wilder, maybe Stiverne.
Yeah, exactly. I think he will.
Possibly even Anthony Joshua if he sticks around long enough.
You know, I just hope for the sake of boxing, for the sake of the heavyweight division, that Klitschko, let's remember what, it's 39 next birthday, that he remains at this level for long enough to give those guys a fight. Because, you know, how old was his brother?
40s.
His brother was 42, wasn't he, I think, when he retired, and there was certainly signs of decline before that. He'd also had a, you know, 3 or 4 year break in the middle. But, you know, let's see with Vladimir. He still sounds super keen to continue. And let's start giving the man some credit.
Okay, talking of from the top of the world to someone whose world's fallen apart, Matthew Macklin lost to Jorge Sebastian Hyland in Dublin last week. A shattering loss, a horrific knockout at the end. Macklin, for all intents and purposes, it seems that it's over for Macklin at world level. Do you agree?
It looks that way. He doesn't look the same fighter he was even 18 months ago. And I don't know, it's easy for me to say, isn't it? Matthew is in love with the game, and at the moment he must be tackling some pretty horrific demons in the fact that his ambition was to win a world title, and suddenly having that taken away at the moment, he must be coming to terms with the fact that he's probably not going to win a world title. And when someone drags away your ambitions like that when you're such a young man, it must be really, really hard to swallow. Will he be willing to go back down to domestic level? I'm not sure.
He indicated on the night that he wouldn't be.
But the people, you know, people change, don't
they?
Yeah,
of course.
And I mean, the thing that I think about with Macklin is that he's been an absolutely compelling warrior for such a long time. But, you know, that even I watched it again recently because there was an anniversary. I think it was the 8-year anniversary of Jamie Moore, Matthew Macklin. And you watched that again, and that was vicious. And he took some really, really severe punishment there, and that was 8 years ago, and he's had...
Yeah, long amateur career. He based himself out in America. He had a lot of tough sparring over there in New York and Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Been around the block, had a lot of tough fights. Obviously, the Stern fight was one that springs to mind. Martinez was a hard fight. The mileage is there. Certainly, it's not like he's young for his age, as it were.
I think he will ultimately find it hard, as every single fighter finds it hard to walk away. And you know, who am I? Who are we to kind of tell someone to retire or someone to stop doing what they love? But you know, he's an affable, warm, articulate man, and you know, I just hope he chooses the right path now.
Okay. So we've obviously got a ringside report from Dublin in the issue this week. We've got a really interesting interview with Roman Gonzalez, one of the top pound for pounders today. He's spoken to Paul Wheeler. We've spoken to both Dave Caldwell and Darren Wilson ahead of the Cleverley Bellew fight, talking tactics and what they think will be the difference makers in the fight on Saturday night. We've obviously got big previews for the Bills in Macau and Liverpool, respectively. Matt, if you could have gone to anyone, you're obviously going to be in Liverpool, but if you could have gone to there or Macau, to which show? Say you're an armchair viewer and you had to choose one show, which show would you be tuning into?
Armchair viewer.
Liverpool or Macau?
Probably Liverpool.
You reckon?
Probably Liverpool. I mean, I love watching Manny Pacquiao, but I think ultimately, despite the almost incessant criticism, I think there's more to enjoy over a longer period of time at Liverpool.
Okay, interesting stuff. Matt, thanks a lot for your time this week. It's been
good.
Interesting. Not laugh a minute like it is sometimes. Not really sort of leaving on a really bouncy vibe like we do sometimes, you know?
Yeah, but sometimes we leave it on a really depressing one, so let's leave it somewhere in the middle.
Okay, quit while we're just
average.
Level, yeah. Before I start talking about next week's Provodnikov-Castillo fight, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, I just did it. Sorry, we lost it. All right, guys, thanks for joining us this week. All being well, Matt and I will be back next week. We'll be breaking down what happened in Macau. In fact, John Denner might even make an appearance should he be back from Macau. And Matt will definitely be on there on the podcast with his review from Liverpool. Guys, thanks a lot for joining us this week, and we'll see you next week.